Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
It's Friday, the 19th of January, which brings to a close, I think, the 7,000th day of January. Everything is cold. Everything is miserable. The UK has been plunged into a slippery layer of frost and we don't quite know what to do. Chicago, we are going to talk about that, seems to just be a giant ice cube. But anyway, it's the Inside EVs podcast day, which is the best thing for every Friday. Also, we're now in a world where the single best car you can buy in the British Isles, according to What Car Magazine, is the Lexus LBX. Have a think about that. I'm thinking about it quite a lot. Editor Patrick is doing a nod. We will discuss this later. Speaking of, as ever, I am your host, Alex Goy, joined by the boss man, Patrick George. Hello, Patrick. How's your week been?
Folks, howdy. I'm good. I was in Detroit last night, got in late, happy to be back in New York City, which isn't any warmer than Detroit, but the warmth of our hot takes will keep us all sustained today. Folks.
Toasty, toasty, flaming. That's what I like. And we have Lacey Misko Electric. How are you? How's your week?
Good morning.
Where are you today?
I am in Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm back in my little cave here in Nashville that I'm spending some time. I'm working on a project for automotive training. So,
And finally, last but very much not least, Hazel Southwell, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm as good as you can be in the Arctic waste that is London at the moment.
Yes, for international viewers and listeners, basically when the UK experiences any sort of weather, everything stops unless it's like grey drizzly between, say, I don't know, 8 and 19 degrees, maybe 21. Everything's fine in that little brick, but lower than that, everything freezes. No one can move. Hotter than that, everything melts. No one can move. So right now we're in a deep freeze. Everyone's very unhappy in the United Kingdom. Aren't we lucky? At least it's not snowing in London yet.
I mean, to be fair, like, it is really cold here at the minute for London. Like, it's 21 Fahrenheit, apparently, or it was when I was coming home last night, having just done a quick conversion.
For real money?
Minus 6.
Oh, that explains why it was a little bit chilly waiting for my taxi this morning. Right, yeah. Okay.
I gotta say, I'm sad to admit this, but I've never been to London. It's like one of the biggest glaring omissions on my like travel list. But I always think of London winters as like a Charles Dickens book or a Christmas Carol, where it's just blanketed in snow and there's like,
well,
boy, what day is today? And it's like, is that what it's actually like in winter for you guys?
Or we get that like wonderful 5 years.
Well, thanks to our wonderful government, the level of poverty is about on par with Dickensian era.
Nice.
Economics. But yeah, oh yeah. But we, it does snow and then London stops and everyone gets very, very confused. I think we'll get snow this year, maybe. Anyway, rather than debating politics and London and Lexus LBXs, let's talk about some EV news. So I guess, friends, the big story of the week is that Chicago's broken. There's a lot to talk about here. Basically, there's a news report, which we'll show you in a moment, reporting dead robots, car graveyards, people trying to charge at initially Tesla supercharger sites, and they couldn't. There's a huge in-depth story on Inside EVs. Basically, if you park your car, it will use about 1% of charge a day. If you have Sentry mode, it'll use 15% of charge. People flying back in Flip flying back into Chicago, have found that their cars were a little bit knackered, and then you take them to a charge port that doesn't seem to be working, even though, because of various various mechanical processes, which again we'll talk to, they sort of are, to precondition the battery to then make it charge, because they won't charge unless the battery is the right temperature. There we are. So yeah, basically no one could charge their Tesla for a while, but then it gets even stranger. Journalist, YouTubist Kyle Connor flew to Chicago, which strikes me as an odd thing to do if we're trying to save the world, but still, flew to Chicago and found out that a bunch of other chargers were also completely knackered, partly because of Uber and Lyft, Uber and Lyft drivers were not charging, or were charging too much, or didn't have enough charge left in. Basically, the whole thing's a mess because the cold has broken everything. So before we have a chat about it, shall we have a look at the Chicago News Report?
Roll it.
Maybe. Hooray.
Okay, well, thank you. That cold is also causing some big time headaches for Chicago area owners of electric vehicles.
Yes, I never thought we'd say this, yeah, but it's true. As Dane Placco reports, the low temperatures have caused some headaches for owners looking to charge their cars.
Electric cars may be the way of the future, but it's clear there are some problems when it comes to charging them in Chicago's deep freeze.
Oh, we got a bunch of dead robots out here.
Dead robots. Dead Teslas packed the parking lot at this Tesla supercharging station in Oak Brook, a scene mirrored at other supercharging stations around the Chicago area.
Man, this is crazy. It's a disaster. Seriously.
With temperatures falling into the negative double digits, these charging ports have stopped charging, leaving many Tesla owners stranded here in long lines since Sunday.
Nothing, no juice, it's still on 0%. And this is like 3 hours this morning being out here, after being out here 8 hours yesterday.
Has it been charging?
No, not at all.
It just isn't working?
At all. It's just frozen, and so I'm now getting it towed to the Tesla service center because that's my only option at this point.
Adding to their frustration, they say, is that they're getting no help when they call Tesla for assistance.
No response from Tesla. We have been suffering since yesterday afternoon.
These are unusually cold temperatures, but do you find this acceptable?
No, not at all. Not really. I think it's less on the actual vehicle and more on the infrastructure.
Tesla has not responded to our emails for comment, but an automobile expert we talked to said that the owners of all EVs should hit the battery preconditioned button on their car before attempting to charge it in extremely cold weather. In Oak Brook, Dane Placco, Fox 32 Chicago.
I long for a local American newsreader's voice. Wow. But yeah, so that's the skinny, or that's what was spread over the internet the other day.
Local TV news is what makes this country so great. I do believe that. I also want to say that if this were a different era of the internet, one that was less fractured than it is now, the dead robots guy would be like a meme. Like, yeah, this week.
Oh, a Vine.
He would,
a,
yeah,
Vine.
It would have been all, RIP Vine. It would have been all over the place. I loved his jacket. I loved everything about that cat. I'm sorry he was born 10 years too late to have been a viral internet star, but dead robots, folks.
Dead robots. Yeah. So first of all, I guess first and foremost, there's so much to this story that kind of goes over my head. The comments are kind of blowing up. Someone says it's 1 out of 15 superchargers. Our story respectfully begs to differ. Various other things. People have opinions on it. So, where do you want to start, friends? Dead robots, how the cold affects chargers, battery chemistry, Tesla.
I'll give some context here. Our British host has been very gracious and helpful in explaining the context around, you know, another country, but where do we start here, right? This is like the coldest winter I think the United States has had in like 2 years about. We had some pretty mild winters before this. And yeah, we haven't really heard of like charging level disasters elsewhere in America. Like, I've heard some headaches in Michigan, but the Chicago thing really blew up. It was a failure on multiple levels. you know, like those chargers, the Tesla superchargers not being maintained, a lot of new drivers not preconditioning their batteries, you know, the sort of cheaper LFP batteries in the Teslas not performing in cold weather as well as they should, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit. You know, there's all kinds of things that came together here. And I think that there's two ways you could respond to this. And one is to do the sort of knee-jerk, well, you know, ice cars are bad in the cold too. And that's true. And it's this story is unfortunately being used as a lot of ammo against EVs in general. But I also think this should be a teachable moment. Like, this shouldn't have happened. And these people, I feel so bad for those Tesla drivers who are, whether they're rideshare drivers or just trying to get to work, like they got screwed. They got stuck and they didn't get any help. And they certainly didn't get any customer service from that company. But like, this shouldn't have happened. And there's a lot of lessons that automakers and the charging companies alike need to take from this so that it doesn't happen, because people see this and it blows up, it slows adoption. So I think that we've seen some weaknesses in what we do here, even if it's not as apocalyptic as a lot of news stations and anti-EV pundits made it out to be. Like, this, it still sucks. And, you know, there's a lot needs to be fixed here.
This story really baffles me as well, because, like, the first place I ever saw a Tesla supercharger point is Norway. Like, Norway has so many Teslas. And, like, I don't feel like I need to explain that Norway is pretty cold. Like, the coldest Chicago gets is basically what Norway is in winter.
That's like Norway's summertime. That's like July for them, you know.
Yeah, like Norway's really, really cold. Like this time when I saw superchargers was because I was driving a van to the Sweden rally, as one does, and we stopped off in a Burger King or something to get something to eat, and there was like a good 3 foot of snow on the ground that was completely dead solid frozen. And people were happily charging their Teslas. And okay, this was a few years ago. It would have been the previous battery chemistry, etc. But if Norway can make what's particularly extreme here?
Yeah, from what I've read, it was a few things. It was that one, they have a lot more home charging in Norway. And I actually think America is really deficient on level two charging. Like, people don't want to talk about that or admit it, or they just kind of hand wave because it's too slow. But if your car's plugged into an L2 charger, home charger overnight, generally you're not really going to have this problem. You just aren't. And there was that. And there's also the fact that these were, I think, a lot of new Tesla drivers. A ton of people bought Model 3s and Model Ys last year because they're cheap. I don't think a lot of them know how to precondition a battery or why you should do that or the steps you should take, you know, to prepare for these kinds of outcomes. And second, it's also like, you know.
And then Tesla isn't offering them the support at the point of sale surely the iPad in the car, I mean, I know it's not literally an iPad, but like surely the car should be like, I need to be preconditioned, help.
Yeah,
well, when you first get a Tesla, it like walks you through a tutorial and explains like how to operate it and what are kind of like some best practices, and in that it does precondition when you go to a charging station. I think a huge problem here is that, you know, people are ignoring the car because when you get a Tesla and you program in your destination, it does the preconditioning for you. It tells you like you need to get to this station. And it also tells you the information on if the charging stations are available. So it'll tell you how many of those stalls are open, and it will completely reroute you to another station that is open based on the determination of how many are being utilized at the time. So there's a lot of like people, I think, that are not putting it into their navigation system and allowing the car to do the work for them. They're just ignoring all these and then rolling up at 1% and expecting that they can just plug in and charge when everyone else is trying to charge.
Yeah.
But to your point too, Patrick, it's like, I truly believe that at this stage, people should not get an electric car if they don't have access to convenient home charging, a level two charging station, or if they have workplace charging, then great, that they can rely on. But that I think is like so important, because relying on the DC fast charging network, and most of the time Tesla is fine to do that, like that's not an issue, but this site in particular had some of those dispensers down, which it happens, not as common with Tesla, but it does happen. And therefore, if you're not going to utilize the car's system to precondition it and also, you know, route yourself to get a charge, then you're going to create a problem for yourself. And it's just a lack of education on how EVs operate. I mean, to be fair, gas cars operate in a lot of similar ways, as you just mentioned, like, but there's, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as being like, it's these people's fault, because there should be reliable charging. But at the same time, we don't have charging stations on every corner like we do have gas stations. So people need to like reframe their mind at this stage until there are like fast charging, reliable fast charging stations all across the country. So I don't know. In my opinion, it's like, it's kind of like user error for a lot of the case. And actually, I've experienced this in, I know rideshare is really popular, especially with electric vehicles, because it's such a cost-effective way to, you know, make money in that program. But it's also a problem in New York. And I've experienced that myself, where I've gone to a charging station and it's like jam-packed full of Ubers that are just trying to get to 100%, which is not great. That's not great to have to wait for those people, because as you get up to those higher states of charge, it takes longer for them to get to 100.
Yeah, so this is gonna be a years long project in America. Like, we have got to stop treating DC fast chargers as like a one-to-one equivalent to the gas station. Like, that has got to end. And that you can put that on users, sure, but I think that's got to be availability in apartment complexes, on streets, at shopping malls, at grocery stores, at movie theaters, wherever people park. But it's like this, exactly what you said, Lacey, like expecting this just like, we're up at 1%. Oh, I'm just going to charge it there and it'll be fine. Like with Tesla, yeah, most of the time you can pull that off. But when you can't, if that's how you operate, you're kind of screwed, you know?
So as a slight diversion, but how do we collectively, just the four of us, or as a society, or as EV people, how do we get that education out to people who just bought an EV because they were told that's the panacea to all the world's ills? How do we inform these people that doing is not ideal?
I do think that it's a big portion of it needs to be the automakers. But the problem is that with legacy automakers, they're making their money on gas vehicles. So they're tiptoeing because they want to be cautious on how they approach this. Because, you know, if you talk about the advantages of, you know, EVs, a lot of that is basically saying, like, don't buy a gas car, which is where they make their money. So they have to do this delicate dance, because then, you know, and I've talked about this before, but dealers make over 40% of their profits on service, and EVs don't require a lot of service. So how are you going to do that delicate dance of, you know, with your dealer partners supporting them, but then also selling these products that are the future, and they know they need to compete, because gosh, they see Tesla record-breaking like close to 2 million cars a year in just EVs. So like, they have to do something, but they do have to do it delicately. So how are they going to do this education in a way that supports everyone?
Let me be the first person to mention Ultium this week. I feel like this, and again, it's partly why the Ultium project is so frustrating, because like, this definitely is something that GM were thinking about with like Ultium Home and this stuff around the infrastructural side of it.
By the way, they canceled that EV Live. They canceled it. It's done. So they're not doing that anymore.
EV Live? I'm good.
EV Dead.
For various reasons, everybody in this podcast is moving a little slowly this morning. Our personal home fast chargers that run our cyborg bodies was also affected by the cold. So we're... a little slow.
Minus 6 degrees in London is kind of slowing us down.
But you asked, like, how do we fix this, right? Okay, so that's a very interesting question. And I'll wind this one up with a little story. So when I was in Texas visiting family over Christmas, I road tripped in a Lightning. We drove all over because I have family over Texas. So I fast charged everywhere. Not ideal, but, you know, when you're on a road trip, you know, that's what you got to do, right? I mean, I'm in Houston. I'm in a nice part of Houston. I was in the Heights, just as if you know Texas at all, like that's a nice area. And like, huge lines with people in like Mercedes EQEs and, you know, BMW iXs, all waiting to fast charge. I mean, like, I can't leave yet. I'm not at 100%. It's like, not all of you jokers are on road trips. And like, if you can live here in this part of town, and drive an EQE SUV. Like, you can afford a home charger, and people aren't doing it. And I wish that all of these automakers would quit with this 3 years of free Electrify America garbage and just throw in a home charger for people. It's like, look, we'll do the install. We'll come out and do it, or we'll give you some insane deal on labor or whatever it is. We'll help the schematics. Because if you're any of these brands and you want people like driving your brand electric for the long time to come, that's a one-time capital expenditure for you. You get somebody a good home charger, hopefully that lasts them for years, and they can keep leasing electric Porsches, BMWs, Lexuses, well, not Lexuses, obviously, from you for forever. And it's like, I think when we overemphasize DC fast charging and road trips, and like that's where the lion's share of the federal government money for charging is going to, is DCFC. Like, this is the stuff that happens, and it's we've got to just sort of reframe all of our thinking away from just like, I fill up when it's at 0% and I fill up at a gas station, because it isn't the same
especially thing. Because so there's extremely legitimate like arguments for why home charging is not just beneficial for the cars and for the drivers, but things like, you know, we have huge JVs with like Google and Ford and GM and all automakers creating these plans for what's worked on a localized level, and there have been test case examples of this in Spain and France and somewhere else, but virtual power plants using EVs as grid balancing. You have to have home charging. They need to be plugged into a two-way charger for this to work. And like, this is going to be how we fix the oncoming, like, I know we talk about this every week, but we are heading way into the find out era of the fossil fuel burning period, and we are going to be in an energy shortage. We're already in an energy shortage. Like, this is already something that countries are experiencing. We've seen it in Texas, we've seen it in Chicago, we've seen it in the Pacific Northwest when the power lines melted and stuff. Like, we are already resource hungry for energy, and EVs are one of the ways that we can balance and deal with that by using them as grid storage and as emergency power supply and things. So there is a huge benefit to the EV owner in having a two-way charger in their own home or connected to their own home in some way. Because that's an emergency power supply that will last you ages. An EV battery will last a home a very long time. It's also got this potential massive benefit as a piece of infrastructure. So this should be where the investment is going, because these are things that we urgently need.
Yeah, and car companies need to manufacture that into their vehicles, because there's a lot of hardware on the market right now that exists that can support V2X or whatever. So that's like, I think, the one main thing. I mean, there are some. The F-150 Lightning is a great example of that. And they, when you get the higher end trims, it comes with the 80 amp charger where you can actually have that installed and use it now, today. And Tesla obviously has been doing that for a while with their Powerwalls, but there aren't enough automakers that are supporting full vehicle to grid, vehicle to X quite yet. And yeah, I think that's a good point to bring up, Hazel, with it. Piece of the puzzle is going to just make it such a value add for people. But that also, you know, that means I think level two needs to be at higher rates in the public too. So like, yeah, we have like what, 11 kilowatt as the most common average level two speed, which is fine, but at this stage I feel like there needs to be like 22 kilowatt or 50 kilowatt, that is, which is technically DC, but you know, lower speeds or that are technically higher than what we see typically from a level two, or lower speeds from DC at 50 kilowatts, to be able to support these like in between type of charging, so that dwell time is matched. And I'll keep saying that over and over, like, we need to match the dwell time with what we're doing with charging. And if that means if you're on a road trip and you need to go at a hotel and stop at a level two charger to charge overnight instead of DC fast charging all the time, like, that's a good solution too.
We have a commenter on there who says, as EV adoption becomes more widespread, landlords will realize being able to offer charging to prospective tenants will be a huge competitive advantage. And that's from Brett Chandler. Very strongly agreed there. And like, I wish that somebody was incentivizing whether it's OEMs or the government, like a big apartment complexes, to just add more L2 charging overnight so that than they have. Because
technically,
like, that's,
they are, though. Like, a lot of people don't know about these federal programs where they can get this installation and they can get the units, the hardware, actually like completely subsidized in most cases. So like, they don't know that they can take advantage of this.
You think it's just the apartment complexes don't want to invest the money, period, which it's shocking, right? But like,
I guess there's the element of who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay for this? Who's going to pay for that? What happens if it breaks? Who maintains it? Who uses it? Is it fair for that? Because I've had the same, weirdly, I've had the same conversation in the block that I live in, because it would be very nice to have some sort of charging facility in the car park here. But all the spaces are in one row. And if I'm the only one that uses it, then we're just digging up the car park for one person, and that's not quite right, and not this, not that. It's there's politics involved with it, sadly.
That's the thing too, is like, I don't want to, like, there is like an education and a user error component to the story for sure, but I really don't want to put this on people, because I think I've been thinking about this, and it's like, I think our British pals are on this podcast are slightly better off than we are, but like, America generally, we are not a public transit country. I wish that we were, but like, in most places in America, you know, you need a car to get around, and you need your car to work all the time, every time. And if you don't, you are screwed. It shouldn't be that way, but that's how this country has been set up. And I just, I really feel for all those drivers who got stuck, who are pushing their cars, who look so despondent, who were out there in the cold, couldn't get to work, couldn't do their job as rideshare drivers, because of this. Cause like, I think they got failed. They got failed by a system. Maybe I don't know. I really don't want to put this too much on people, because that doesn't work if we're going for wider adoption. You know, you could be one of these folks who's like, you've owned a Tesla since 2012 and you're kind of sneering at the newcomers. And that's not fair. That doesn't get us where we need to go. So
I agree with that.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, I think also any OEM, whether that is Tesla or, you know, whoever, BMW, whatever company, who goes, oh, your car that we made stopped functioning, skill issue, like, that's not an acceptable response. And you know, a lot of what was being complained about by the people in Chicago was the fact that they couldn't get hold of Tesla about the fact that their car wasn't working. So like, they're not necessarily being like, oh no, EV's bad, like the cold made them stop working. A considerable amount of the 1 minute or so of the news broadcast was them going like, why can't anyone tell me what the hell is going on?
Yeah, like why isn't there someone at the other end of the Tesla bat phone? And well, for myriad reasons. Kind of on that education point, and on that kind of not knowing stuff point, you don't want to blame people. That's bang on. I was with I was at a training academy for an OEM the other day doing a story, and we were talking about how they train their technicians not only to deal with how to fix EVs and how to do stuff, but also so they can communicate it to customers, because what they're terrified of is a customer not understanding something like, what is a heat pump? What is preconditioning? How does this work? How's that? And then they go onto a public forum, either Facebook or Twitter or you know, weloveevs.com/forum. And they either get spoken down to, or they're given dodgy advice. They're given advice that they don't quite know how to pass, because the people who know all the things assume everyone knows the same. Or they're given very confidently delivered nonsense. So at least over here, one particular manufacturer, name and shame, but they're kind of a little bit worried that you have the people who are switching out of their normal, you know, workaday hatchback and, right, I've got my first EV, I'm going to take it in for a service. What does all this nonsense mean? And so they're actively trying on the service side of things to make sure that people have it all explained to them.
That's what I do for a living. I teach these people, because, well, and the problem is there's a lot of people like me that do this type of a job. And, you know, I've been doing it for a really long time, but there are some people that are in my position that have never owned an EV and don't know the intricacies of an EV. And so the problem is they're not relaying certain things that are important to include or to competitively set up as to why something like a heat pump is better than what a resistive heating system that we see in some of the other EVs on the market today. So there's some a missing link to an extent, because, you know, I kind of feel like you need to be thrown in the mix of the ownership experience and like living with an EV for a little bit to actually be able to communicate some of this stuff properly. I'm not saying all automakers are doing it wrong, but there are some that are missing the mark.
Yes, that. No, that makes perfect sense. Away from education and back to the terribleness. There's a little bit of in there about battery chemistry, which is where we need to kind of call upon our angel of all things battery chemistry, Hazel. So they were saying that in the piece, there's basically two types. You've got LFP and NCA. LFP is more readily available, cheaper to make, but sadly less energy dense, which is what some of the cars that seem to have been struggling has on board. Whereas the other type, more energy dense, better for charging, handles better in the cold. Basically, LFP doesn't have a great time when it's chilly. Hazel, what do you think?
Yes. Honestly, this shouldn't really matter. The temperatures that are being talked about are not at the extremes of LFP. Like, LFP batteries are technically certified. I mean, even the ones going in Teslas are technically certified for a lot colder than this. And, like, yes, they will need some preconditioning to perform at their best. I actually think some of this might not be the battery, some of it might be the chargers as well. So, because charge cable freezing is a thing, charge cables are very sensitive to heat. They overheat during charging events to the point that, like, there's a lot of research being put into cooling charging cables so that you can get higher voltage or higher rates of charging.
A really good way to cool them is to stick them in Chicago right now.
Yes, yeah, just put them there, they're fine. Yeah. So charging cables are vulnerable to both heat and cold damage, and that certainly will be a factor. The batteries, if they were being preconditioned, if they were being treated with battery blankets is a thing that a lot of EV owners, particularly in countries like Norway, have been using for a very long time in order to look after the batteries overnight. But again, that's like, I don't want to tell people that, like, they're stupid for not realizing that you had to, like, tuck your car in and give it a little cuddle in order for it to function.
Because you mean that's not normal? I really
don't. Yeah.
Did they try telling the Teslas they love them? Because that's probably why they didn't work. They don't feel appreciated.
Just your car more. It will
just
be
say
fine.
Nice things to it. Now maybe take it out for a nice dinner every now and then. Bring some flowers home. You put
give it some of that high grade electricity. Oh,
exactly. I personally don't think that LFP is particularly the restriction here. There's also, I mean, CATL have made LFP batteries that are certified to, like, incredible levels of minus numbers. LFP overall is a massive step forward in chemistry. It's generally safer. It uses a lot less harmful things. It's much more recyclable. And as much as there's a lot of, like, anti-EV people who are like, haha, look, EVs don't work in cold weather, there's also quite a lot of EV people who are like, hey, well, if you get a cheap LFP battery, then, like, I think you'll find this isn't really, you know. Like, no, these are the first step on better batteries, because we have to acknowledge that the batteries and the battery chemistry and the battery builds and the battery recycling and everything about them are a big problem with EVs and EV adoption and EV manufacturing. So if you're kind of twirling your mustache and going like, well, are people buying these cheaper Model 3s, you know, like, I don't, there is no particular reason that LFP would be less, or would just cease functioning. I don't think these are, although it is an extreme weather event, it's not that extreme. Like, this isn't Norilsk, it is still Chicago. And like,
yeah,
I think there's way too much potential for people to use this as a stick to kind of beat LFP, right, when it's the best option we currently have.
No, it will be. And it's not just LFP, it's everything about this. It's like you're already seeing this argument being used in a lot of just knee-jerk anti-EV stuff. Yeah, it was all over Fox News this week. It's like they get so much, you know, I don't mean to be conspiratorial, they get a lot of petrochemical advertising. It just does. And it's there's that's being turned into a culture war issue. Like it's a real hit, this whole thing.
Fox News turning something into a culture war. Patrick, you do surprise me.
I know. The things I say are just utterly shocking. The truth bombs I drop on this channel.
Anyway, sorry, yes, they turn it into a cultural issue, so then the story blows up and everything becomes worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah,
worse.
And there's automakers I've talked to who, you know, there's people within them that are like, you know, see, this just isn't working out, this whole EV thing, let's just go back to what we've always been doing, and then I can retire and be left alone. It's like, this is ammo against that kind of stuff, so it's an unfortunate moment. Forgive me for not knowing this, I should, but has Elon Musk addressed any of this? Has Tesla... Has X addressed any of it? Who's
hold, please, caller. I will check. I will check his Twitter feed. Yeah. Talk amongst ourselves. Back in a sec.
We called the hot phone, the hotline, the bat phone ourselves. You know, like
I doubt his private jet's frozen over, so it's probably chilled.
That's the other thing too. When we were reporting this story at Inside EVs, I was like, damn it! Like, this is like, if it was Electrify America, it was ChargePoint, it was any of the usual suspects. Like, we know people at those companies. I could call and I could interview, and there's so much we could have figured out and gotten out to the public. This company, as always, is a cipher, and I think to its detriment in this case, because like they had a chance to address this and get ahead of it. And I'm sure what we got instead are tweets about the woke mind virus. So, you know.
But also, I mean,
There's some pretty...
I know. I know. We kind of talked about this earlier, but ICE cars stop working in extreme cold as well. Like, if you look at places like Alaska, like Yakutsk, Norilsk, like people literally have to leave their vehicles running all the time in order for them to continue functioning. Like, you cannot turn your car off in.
Well,
the
Hazel, that is not a juicy news story. How dare you?
but like, you know, I don't know if it's just me being from like the, you know, podcast resident former Soviet Union correspondent, but like this is not a new thing. Like your vehicle struggles in extreme cold temperatures isn't an EV problem. It's like that just happens.
Well, to answer the question, have we had any response from Musk? I checked his X feed. There's some pretty fire memes and some pictures of spaceships, but nothing I could see that said, how bad, looking into it. I might have to spend more time going through his replies, but that I just want to do anything other than that, frankly, because it's a bit of a bin fire in there.
I'll give you hazard pay for that one, so we'll talk about it later.
Well, then there's the other aspect of this story, which is Uber, Lyft, Electrify America, EVgo also contributed to it, because it wasn't just those, it wasn't just some Tesla points. There were some Electrify America places, there were other places, but also it's because this kind of element of the story wrinkles my brain a touch, because it's not quite as common over here, but people hiring EVs that they don't necessarily know about to then be an Uber or a Lyft driver. So for those of us who aren't on that side of the pond, when did that become a thing? How has that become a thing? What's the deal there?
It's been a thing.
Yeah.
Especially in the big cities. Like, the big cities is where it's like a huge thing.
Right.
Yeah. So many people bought Teslas for cheap last year. There was this great line in the Bloomberg story from 23. I'm actually mad I didn't come up with this myself. It's like Teslas have gone from the car of the uber wealthy to the Uber driver. And they're just like all over the place now for ride hail drivers in New York City. You see them everywhere. And I think that that's, you know, those people, I think, don't have as much the option of L2 charging as the rest. Maybe the option of it, obviously, but it's like you kind of depend on fast charging if you're like on the road all the time. So like these have become massively popular as ride hail vehicles, their entire ride share services that just use fast charging EVs. You know, one of them is like Revel here in New York. Which they're going to expand other cities soon. Like they built DC fast chargers for their own fleets and for anybody else.
Exactly.
To use. They're like, look, we're doing this, but we're providing them with charging as we're doing it. I don't think that Uber and Lyft are going to make those kind of capital expenditures because they also don't like spending money. You know?
Yes.
They have had subsidy programs. Like they like say there's like a special thing. I think both Lyft and Uber have subsidies to, get their drivers to get EVs. Like they pay for a certain amount of, and they give you like, I can't remember what it is exactly, but I've seen it before in the last few years where Uber and Lyft have both come out with subsidy programs for their drivers to buy EVs.
But yeah, for this particular story, now we've got people who are renting things and then they don't really know what to do with them, which again, it goes back to our education issue, I guess. Like, how do we teach these people what to do and how to use them? And that equivalency of one to one, oh, I need to charge to 100% because then I can drive for longer in the freezing cold in Chicago, which is, basically, it sounds like a big bin fire, but an ice fire. It sounds pretty rough. Have we heard anything like what's happened since? What do we know that's happened post the story? Is everything sort of vaguely back up and running? Are the charges that are down, are they back up? What do we know so far?
That's a great question. I don't actually know offhand. I don't know if they're going to get those particular Chicago Tesla stations fixed or not. I think it's fair to say that as cold as this week has been, we haven't really seen other like massive issues with charging besides a little bit of the usual suspects. Like, I do think this was a pretty extreme case, limited to one place that like blew up on the news. But like, let's be fair, like this was not some sort of widespread national outage problem, but it was enough of a headache that it needs to get dealt with sooner than later.
Also, like, we've got a commenter, Brett, I think, who was saying like it's minus 20 centigrade in, or 28 centigrade in Yukon at the minute, and his EV is working just fine. Chicago, the reason that this has blown up is because Chicago has a lot of EVs. There's a lot of people out there using them. This story doesn't happen for instance, I'm sure it's a lot colder than it is in Chicago in Michigan right now because Michigan's fucking cold. I'm not hearing massive numbers of stories about like F-150 Lightnings and whatever just carking out, and that every charging point in Michigan is broken because presumably there just isn't a very high proportion of EVs there relative, but also like Chicago is a city, like, so the concentration is so dense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say this story is nothing, because like your car not working is rubbish, like, and the car should work and the company should be addressing this, and the charging providers, whether it's inside Electrify America or like Tesla or whatever, should be sorting this out. But also, this is like, it didn't really work for a couple of days once in one location.
Yeah, it's being treated like the end of the world, which I don't think it is.
Yes, I mean, yeah, it was fascinating to watch it unfold from you know, this side of the pond in various places going, oh, apparently America has no electricity left and it's all a little bit too chilly. And then just watching the comments appear underneath for everyone going, well, how dare they?
I mean, also, like, to fully kind of like cop to with it without us making without us sounding too smug, because Lord knows Britain's infrastructure is rubbish.
Oh, it's woeful, it's hateful.
Quite
but,
a lot of London's buses have not been working lately because the hybrid system isn't really functioning.
Oh, is this the miraculous new route master that they decided to build without windows and make a giant greenhouse? It's basically the pinnacle of poor design.
No, although actually I approve of that one, because you shouldn't really be able to open the window on the bus, because it stops. Either you need windows opening or aircon, but not both.
It's another story for another day in a pub.
Yeah. If you get on a bus, which I do every night after I finish closing the bar I work in, when it's really cold, you can really tell that the hybrid system or the EV system isn't working on the bus because it's chugging along. And like, you don't realize how much it actually does until it's suddenly not there. And firstly, the bus is really noisy. And secondly, it's shaking like an old bus used to. Which like now they're really smooth and they move so quick off lines and stuff. Whilst we're having our own cold weather event, there is definitely an effect here. And for sure, if we had anything like the EV adoption of Chicago, which we don't, EV adoption here is very poor, then I'm sure we'd be having like similar complaints. So, yeah, just to kind of like lessen the smugness level.
Patrick, you look like you have something to say. You look concerned.
This is just my face, Alex. It always looks that way. The
I think you say that every week.
It is.
We need someone to clip it. We need someone to clip it.
My wife says I have resting asshole face, which is mean because I can't help how it looks. I was just thinking, I was wondering if we wanted to, in the last 10-15 minutes of this cast, to shift gears a bit.
Yes, let's talk about something other than broken Teslas, and let's talk about the headline of the story kind of says it: is the Tesla Cybertruck a dud? An experienced EV reviewer thinks so. Kyle Connor, a previous we've mentioned him already on this podcast today, has spent a lot of time, and he's done some really quite in-depth testing with a Cybertruck. He's been playing with it, he's been pressing buttons, he's been running it from full to empty. He's basically been one of those people that will spend his entire day prodding and poking and seeing what happens. He's said in a podcast, is this the first Tesla dud? I think objectively yes. Which, being a person in the EV space and being on the internet, that's an incredibly brave thing for him to say. Is his house okay? Has he been looked after? Or do we know if he's safe?
Yeah, has anyone checked on Kyle lately? Is he alive? No, it's you know what? He was. I think he gave a fair and thorough review here. I appreciate that Kyle, had the guts to be that candid about this product. But like, he also said he'd be interested in buying one. He was like, I'm trying to look where he looks. He would say he would take. He would take the Hummer over this, I believe. But he'd take the Silverado and the Hummer EV over the Cybertruck.
So we just need to
like the Cybertruck more than the Lightning and the Rivian R1T. So I thought he gave a pretty balanced.
I just need to pause you very briefly, Patrick, because Hazel's face went in many different angles. There was sort of terror, fear,
I think
anger,
mine did too.
Surprise.
I cannot take any human being seriously who is endorsing the Hummer EV. I'm sorry.
Have you been to America lately? That's a normal-sized 10,000-pound vehicle that's legally, technically farm equipment under U.S. law, you know?
Yeah, you need a special driving license to drive that in the U.K. It's technically a lorry.
One of my favourite things in the previous edition of me and Patrick working together was when the UK government announced that Hummer were going to build them here, and I had to get in touch with GM and be like, this is nuts, right? Because yes, you need a heavy goods vehicle license to drive them in,
like proper anywhere proper that isn't America. Truck license, which is ludicrous.
But anyway. But yeah, sorry that I'll stop derailing. But yeah, I'm sorry. That's an incredibly unserious opinion.
Lacey, what do you make of all this? Have you seen it? You know the jam. Have you driven a Cybertruck?
I have not driven one yet. We're waiting for our VIN for ours. We're going to be hopefully getting it within the next couple months. I actually disagree with Kyle, but I think he laid it out by saying like it really does depend on each person and what their priorities are as a driver on what they want to buy and what fits their lifestyle. So I want to get that out of the way. But the reason why I disagree with him is because I think that Tesla is going to sell all of the Cybertrucks that they can. And one thing, just looking at from an industry standpoint in the manufacturing process, I think they're doing this right by incorporating some of the new technology that they are coming out with, like 48-volt architecture and the steer-by-wire system. The actuators in it are from the Optimus robot. So the fact that they're putting all of this new technology and dumping the R&D money into this product, I think is a smart choice considering pickup trucks are a high profit margin thing, so it's already going to be expensive. So put that money into this type of thing, because ultimately those are technologies that they need in order to get the robo-taxi out, which is going to be a much lower cost product. So I actually think that the Cybertruck is not – I think the Model X is more of a dud than the Cybertruck, to be fair, just because, like, who needed the Falcon Wing doors, really? I mean, that was just a – not as practical as a ploy, in my opinion, than what we see with the Cybertruck. Obviously, I haven't driven. Yeah, I haven't driven the Cybertruck yet, so I can't give my opinion about the driving experience and stuff like that. But just looking at it from that perspective, I think that it is not a dud because of the way that it's going to progress Tesla as a company and the future products that they have coming out, whether that's Optimus or the Robotaxi.
Patrick, again, you look confused, but that might just be your face again. What's your jam on it?
I think Lacey's kind of right. It's like, I don't think this is going to affect Cybertruck sales too much. It's especially right now, the first, maybe probably most of this year, anyone who wanted one or reserved one is going to buy one. I wonder when the luster might wear off a bit. You know, we just had a story that went live on Inside EVs this morning about, range of the Cybertruck not being terribly amazing either. So I'm sort of wondering when and how the luster really starts to fade in this thing, or if that'll happen. And it's like Model X, an interesting comparison, because like that thing really, when you look back, that thing really came and went very quickly. Like Model S,
it's
amazing,
doing terrible.
groundbreaking car, you know, hugely important, changed the auto industry. So did Model 3, so did Model Y. X was this was like, we're gonna skip over it. And now it's, Cybertruck has way more hype than that ever did. So I don't know how that's gonna play out here.
Yeah, and I think that to your point, oh, sorry, I'm losing it. I was gonna say something that was tied to that. But yeah, just move on because I can't remember. If I remember, I'll bring it up.
I mean, I definitely don't think it's going to affect sales if the bloke who's calling it a dud is still saying he'd buy one.
Yeah, very valid point. I don't like this thing. I think this is the worst car they've built. I'll take three.
What I was going to say was that I think that a lot of people expected more from Cybertruck at that delivery event. So I think that that's why it's kind of just like a gray cloud over it, because it was supposed to come out, you know, it was supposed to have like a bench seat in the front. It was supposed to have all these like different things, like better range. Like they got this range extender that's going to go in the back of the bed and it's going to take up a lot of space. So it's like, I actually kind of feel that same way with my Rivian, because I wanted the Rivian because of the usability factor of like the camp kitchen and all this other stuff, like the power tonneau cover. And like, I didn't get any of that, which I'm very disappointed in. But I think it was kind of along the same lines of the Cybertruck, is like people were expecting more out of it, even though it's still like a good product. Like, I think people are going to buy them. But it's just, it was a kind of a letdown if you were waiting for it for a very long time.
Tim Oliston jumps in on this comment. I like this. Cybertruck is a high margin item, which will subsidize Tesla's future with 100% of units built, sold for years. I'm not sure. I completely agree about subsidizing their future entirely, but like He's right. It's like this car was a it's a supercar. The Cybertruck ended up being it's a high price tag, high margin vehicle with crazy features, and it's everyone you when you see you're gonna be stunned when you see it. It's Tesla's Lamborghini. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think a lot of people just thought that it was gonna like put the Ford F-150 out of business, and that is to date not the case.
No, not yet. So one more thing we need to touch on before we can go, before we go merrily into our Fridays and then the weekend where I think we all need a big rest. right now, our man Kevin Williams is in California in a Kia EV9. Now, this is a car that has seems to have been launched about 1,000 times, because I know various people in the US have driven it in various stages. There's been about 3 or 4 UK launches, then a reveal event after it had been revealed.
And it's on sale already here.
And it's on sale. So Patrick, fill us in. What's Kevin doing? He's in California. What's he going to do? And what do we think he's going to make of it?
Yeah, he's in Napa right now because he's smarter than we are while we all freeze in the Midwest and the East Coast and London. Kevin's like, I'm out, and I hopefully brings back a case of wine when he does. But you know, this is I think now that we're in 2024 and Cybertruck is behind us, this is probably the most important new vehicle launch of the year. Besides maybe the electric Macan and Q6 e-tron for software reasons of Volkswagen, but that's not as sexy as this. Like, this is a big deal. Americans love a three-row crossover. Hyundai and Kia and Genesis have been crushing it lately. It's almost size and proportion exactly the same as the Kia Telluride, which was massively successful for Kia. I mean, I think that the gas Telluride probably sort of made them what they are today as we understand modern Kia. So this could be a huge deal. So he's out there driving this thing. I believe he's on his way back. Nothing awesome. Died this time. Thankfully, he did not fast charge it and then cause, you know, the entire Eastern Seaboard's power supply just blink out for 5 days.
Okay, so this explains what's going on in Chicago.
Yeah.
He plugged a car in. Did he plug another Ultium Blazer in or something?
No, this doesn't use the Ultium. It uses the EGMP instead. So
No. But did Kevin plug something into Chicago and then leave to dry EGMP?
Well, yeah, the investigation is ongoing there. but it's a big deal. And I'm excited to see his review. I believe our colleagues at Motor One are going to have one up soon. But I drove this thing briefly in Korea last year. I mean, briefly, it was like I was stuck in a traffic jam in it for like an hour in Seoul, which was crushingly boring and awful. It's a really nice car. It's very big. I think it's going to sell like crazy in this country. I think they have a serious hit on their hands. You talk about something that they may sell everyone they can build. I'm not sure I see this thing just sitting on dealer lots in America.
And it is kingly priced. So it starts at just shy of 55,000 US and goes up to just shy of 74,000. Okay, there are things you can add to it, and there will be ways to make that incredibly expensive, and there'll be ways to cut prices down and all that. But it seems for the size of vehicle it is, that doesn't seem like terrible value, especially what it can do. 350 kilowatt charging, if you can find it, decent range, quick as well, and big, spacious, enough for families.
I think that the one risk this thing runs is that like people could look at this and be like, well, I could get a gas Telluride for 20 grand less. And it's like the exact same size car. And you really can't say that about like an Ioniq 5 or an EV6. Like, they don't have direct equivalents in their lineups, you know, not like they make crossovers, right, but not like directly competing. So this thing could come up against Telluride and something like, well, I'll just get the gas one for cheaper. But you're getting a lot here, and you know, they offer really competitive lease deals. They offer really crazy factory and dealer discounts of these things. I think they're going to go for cheaper to just get them out the door. So like, I do see this being a pretty big success for Kia this year.
Also, the EV9 has a massive battery, and it does have that vehicle to grid stuff that we was talking about earlier. And like, that should be some of the marketing, is like, you can fit your whole family in here, and if the power grid craps itself, then you, like, your car can do everything. Which, like, you can get a gas Telluride for 20 grand, but can you get that and a home Powerwall install and whatever?
So it's very good for survivalists.
I thought it just had vehicle to load, which was only like 3.6 kilowatts of outputting power, but I don't, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I thought it was just vehicle to load. But I know that that like Hyundai Group has like a program where they have like solar energy batteries and stuff like that that they're launching, but I don't know. I'd have to do a little bit more research on that.
Kia UK says it's got V2G, but I don't know if the I might be talking about a slightly different model because obviously they do have different markets models. Right. Also, I don't know who's buying an EV9 here because you're not going to fit that in any parking space, but never mind.
it is big, but Americans like big. It's like, excuse me, American families, they won't admit that what you want is a minivan. And nobody will admit it. So we have to dress up minivans to look rugged and adventurous and like ready for desert adventure and the apocalypse. But it's like, you know, I want to say this thing's a minivan, but it's effectively a minivan. It's the car that carries all of your people and all of your stuff. And it's fast and it's sexy looking and the range is great. But at the end of the day, it's like we love like a giant people mover in this country. At least you get out of the cities, you know? Yeah.
So I am a major minivan advocate.
This is a Renault Espace off of the 80s, but with a battery. I saw the new Espace the other day. It's a generic SUV. It's not as cool as an EV9. And on that, we have gone a little bit over our hour. First and foremost, thank you all so much for watching or listening, depending on when and where you are in the process. Also, huge thanks to our man behind the scenes, Danny Howard, for making all the magic happen on the live stream. If you would like to get in touch with us, please do so. Email us at contact@insideevs.com, or you can find us all on various social medias if you'd like to. All that remains to be said is goodbye, team. Goodbye, and thank you to Miss Go Electric, to Hazel Southwell, and to Patrick George. We're all waving on the live stream. If you're not watching, then imagine what waving looks like. We will see you next week for the last podcast of January, I think. Then January will be over, and then spring will be near, and there'll be sunlight again.
Then we can be happy again.
We can be happy. Bye.
Bye, everyone.